And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, I'm talking about Alabama. I mean, I love living here. And so, yeah, this show, we go like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Well, we're going to go back to the phones here in a minute and bring in a good friend of mine. And just so you know, by the way, Boomer is still tallying all the text messages that came flooding in as to whether or not we play the camel a day early. So if you still, we'll go ahead and take it just for a minute more. 833-68-RIGHT, that's the number, 833-687-4448. And if you think we ought to play the camel a day ahead of Wednesday because so many of y'all are going to be like off for Thanksgiving and this is truly the hump day of the week, you just tell us. Although I will say it's a close race, like legitimately a close race.
Very close.
All right, listen, number one of the Triple Dipper is called Reading the Tea Leaves. And we're talking about the numbers. As we head towards election year, I mean, y'all, we are down to the wire. The Iowa caucuses are coming up. The giant, you know, Super Tuesday primaries are coming up. I mean, we're within 60 to about 180 days of major primaries. We'll know who the candidates are. We're less than a year from the general election. It feels like a long way away. It is not, just so you know. And so somebody who has been a dear friend of mine and the lovely Charlene's for a number of years, John Rogers, is now a pollster and analyst with Signal Analytics working in D.C. on national-level polling. I thought, you know what, I'm going to just grab my friend John and see if he can give us some latest insights. So without further ado, John Rogers, how are you doing, my friend?
Phil Williams, doing well. Great to be on with you. And you're right, it's incredible that Thanksgiving is just a couple of days away, the Iron Bowl after that, although, you know, my excitement for the Iron Bowl as an Auburn fan went down considerably after that three-touchdown loss to New Mexico State last weekend.
Okay, I don't think you got the memo that we don't talk about that game on this show. Yeah, I'll just tell you, man, I have no idea how to explain that. If you've got any polling on how that feels, just let me know. But all right, let's dig into political polling. So what's the latest, man? Where are we headed here? Do we have firm grasp on who will be the candidates and what are the issues and what are the trends?
You know, it's really interesting. On the Democratic side, there's been a raft of polling the last couple of weeks that came out 2 or 3 weeks ago from the New York Times. There were 6 battleground states that the New York Times and Siena College polled. And in those 6 battleground states, Trump actually led in 5 of the 6.
Wow.
And that just kicked off a round of just, you know, consternation on the Democratic side. David Axelrod, who was really the brain trust behind Obama's 2 campaigns, I mean, he was pretty vocal saying that Joe Biden ought to consider stepping down. And it just really created a lot of, you know, waves on the left. But what the reality is, Biden is not going to step down. I mean, this is a guy who's been he's wanted to be president since he was probably in college, right? If not before.
Right.
So he's not going to step down. And the Democrats are stuck with him. And, you know, I think what's happening, though, is, you know, it's interesting because the White House is trying to sell this idea of Bidenomics, right? They think that they're like, you know, the American people should be grateful for all the progress that's happened still on the economy, right? They think that they saved the American economy from COVID. And that's just not lining up with with the reality and how the American public sees it, which is the Inflation Reduction Act layered, you know, billions of dollars, you know, in spending and actually caused inflation to spike. And so the American public is just not buying the Bidenomics messaging right now.
Well, and I think that's because it's too easily controverted. I mean, you can tell me all you want that it's not raining, but the reality is I can feel it on my face. You know what I'm saying? It's just obnoxious when you go to the grocery store and you spend 17% more for bacon this year than you did, you know, when Biden took office, and you know things are wrong. So yeah, Bidenomics is a joke, and the very idea that they're trying to grasp that and make it their campaign platform, I mean, I guess I got nothing else to work with.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that there are, you know, different voter groups that you would normally maybe think of as being a part of the Democratic coalition that the Democratic Party is not going to be able to take for granted at all in the fall once we get to the general election. We just finished up at Signal a survey of 4 states, kind of 4 key states of Florida, Texas, Nevada, and Arizona, of Hispanic voters across those four states, of 1,200 Hispanic voters. So, you know, a really large survey in four key election states. And we asked, you know, a number of different questions about whether they trusted the Republican or the Democratic Party more on issues like immigration, abortion, education. And we asked about the economy. And more Hispanics said that they trust the Republican Party than they trust the Democratic Party on the economy. And this is despite the fact that, I mean, Biden won a large majority of the Hispanic vote. I mean, if you look at some exit polls, he may have won as much as 65% of the Hispanic vote in 2020. But where we are now is that a lot of those voters, and I think especially with Hispanic voters, what the left has done, you know, they are so beholden to the sort of narrow identitarian, identity, campus-based, you know, woke politics. That's how they see everything. That the left thought, well, what we're going to do is we're going to commit to amnesty and open borders, and then we're going to make Hispanics a permanent part of our coalition.
Yeah.
And that sort of narrow thinking just totally missed the mark, and it was, I think, a pretty grave miscalculation. And so in our poll of Hispanic voters, we found that Trump would win 41% of the vote, which would be a pretty substantial increase from 2020. And then a non-Trump Republican nominee would win about 43%. So, you know, it's the Bidenomics is just a message that a lot of the electorate is not buying.
Well, that's an interesting trend. I mean, you're right. The Democrats have constantly gotten themselves into identity politics, and they segregate voters. And granted, I mean, in polling, we do this. You look at the crosstabs. How do we fare with women, suburban women? How do we fare with, you know, whites, blacks, whatever? But still, we don't go out there and campaign, I need the black vote. But that's what you see so happening so often. And I'm hearing, by the way, that not only the Hispanic vote, but that Biden is losing the younger voters, which I find to be interesting because he's been promising the world to them with, you know, student loan bailouts and everything else. You got any numbers on that? Because I got a few that I'll dig into later if you don't.
Yeah, we've seen, so we do a national poll every month, and we have seen that Biden's image has weakened among young voters, especially young men. And so, you know, that's been something that we've seen, you know, pretty often. And I think a lot of it goes back to the economy is not doing great. And I think a lot of young voters look at Biden and they think, man, this guy seems pretty feeble. He seems pretty frail. He just turned 81 on Monday. And that has an effect. And people like David Axelrod have acknowledged that as well. And so it definitely has, you know, young voters are still going to be majority Democratic, most likely. But if you're a Democrat strategist, you can't take it for granted.
No, I think you're absolutely right. It's really these are trends that, you know, of course, Axelrod had his meltdown and that drew a reaction from the White House. We're told of some back room reactions too, but I would think that everything that you've just told me has got to have the Democrats just almost to the point of being apoplectic right now. And I know you said it, Joe Biden's wanted to be president since he was in college, and you're right. I think that's exactly right. I think this has been his life's ambition, and it didn't matter what it took to get there. But who's in the wings? I mean, is there anything out there that says, okay, if not Biden, then we're really excited about this person? Is there anything you got that says that?
If you talk to Democrats privately, Democratic strategists, they'll point to people like Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. They'll mention her. Gavin Newsom is somebody else that a lot of Democratic strategists kind of look at with longing eyes. And you can see Gavin Newsom, you know, with the debate that I think he's got coming up with Ron DeSantis. You know, he's obviously trying to put himself more and more on the stage and wants to be the heir apparent to Biden. One name that is not commonly mentioned by Democratic strategists is Vice President Harris.
Yeah.
And she's kind of seen as like an afterthought, I'm sure, to her frustration. But you almost never have somebody say, well, you know, she's the person that's going to step up and would be able to take the reins from Biden. But, you know, I mean, this is a really live issue, I think, because, you know, you look at the actuarial tables, President Biden is no spring chicken. And, you know, who the vice president is and who would be the successor to the presidency really matters when you're talking about somebody who's in their 80s.
Well, okay. I think you're absolutely right. So All right. If we're looking at the numbers trending away, and all, by the way, you and I both know that even a week is a lifetime in politics, and that we've got technically just under a year until the general election. A lot of things can happen between now and then. The incumbency can crash or the incumbency can ascend, and we have to wait and see to some degree, but we have to work too. So right now, if we're going to claim the issues, I heard you mention the economy. Is there anything else that is issue-based that you look at right now and say, this is a hot topic for voters that we haven't already talked about?
Yeah, what's happening in Israel, and the reason why that matters, you know, sort of electorally here, is that the left can't decide if they're going to call out the anti-Semites on their own in their own part of their coalition, and so you've got a pretty vocal part of the left, especially on the, you know, in college campuses, that it's not just that they support the Palestinian people; they are like against the Jewish state, right, and against Jewish people. And you see that because they're, you know, you have random attacks against synagogues across the world, and even here in the United States, right. So that's an issue that I think if Republicans, if conservatives, if we play it smartly, I think that we can force some Democratic candidates to, you know, answer charges of extremism on this issue, right? And so the left always likes to attack conservatives and Republicans on, you know, saying that we're extremists when it comes to abortion. But we've got to turn that around and say, look, you know, are you going to call out members of the House of Representatives who are Democrats who are, you know, fairly not just anti-Israel, but they're anti-Jewish, and really try to make that an electoral issue.
Okay, man, I tell you what, with about a minute and a half to 2 minutes left, let me just ask you this. Have you polled anything of a regional nature? Like, do you have anything on the Alabama congressional races, or do you have anything about how the, say, the Iowa caucuses themselves are looking? What are you seeing in terms of a sort of a geographic locale?
So we had not polled in the congressional races recently in Alabama. And, of course, that's an interesting – both – there's two interesting races down in South Alabama. You have the second congressional district, which was redrawn basically mandatory by the Roberts Court, you know, inserting – you know, just kind of overstepping their bounds. And so the legislature was forced to accept the maps that were drawn by the courts. And the second congressional district, which has been represented by Barry Moore – he was drawn out of that. Now he's in the first congressional district, and he's going to be running against Jerry Carl. And in the second congressional district, it went Biden plus 12 in 2020 in the presidential race. But actually in 2022, Kay Ivey won it narrowly.
Wow.
So I think there's some thinking that, yeah, it's a Democratic, you know, it leans Democratic, but it's not heavily Democratic. And there's a couple of really smart folks who are running on the Republican side, especially you've got Dick Brubaker, former state legislator, who I think has some resources that he'll be able to put into the race. And so I think that could be a more competitive race than maybe at first glance if we have the right nominee on the Republican side.
Well, I completely agree. And then anything on Iowa with about 30 seconds left? You see anything on that? Or just personally, what's John Rogers say?
Well, in Iowa, Nikki Haley has benefited from having a little bit of a bump, but, you know, what's going to happen is the field is going to winnow down to about three after Iowa. And so Trump will obviously be one of those three, then it's probably going to be DeSantis, and then it'll be, you know, maybe Vivek Ramaswamy, maybe Nikki Haley. But, you know, I mean, you still have New Hampshire, still have South Carolina. I think it'll be a pretty competitive race up through the SEC primary.
Well, man, as always, I imagined it, and you did not disappoint that you'd come in with some pretty clear pictures, some visuals there, and I appreciate it. Hey, John Rogers, you have a great Thanksgiving, man. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Okay.
Thanks, Phil. Same to you.
All right, take care. All right, that was just so that's just cool. By the way, I've known John for years, and I have to give credit. In my last campaign, he was my campaign manager. In 2014 and for the state Senate, and just did a dynamic job and really caught other people's attention and then just has just done some amazing things. And here he is in D.C. now working with a national pollster and calling into the show. That's just very cool. What a great small world moment. All right, we're going to come back and find out what the numbers look like for playing the camel. Dang, boom. It's like a thing. I mean,
it's a thing.
It's a thing. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.